afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis.
And I'm Kyle Dotson.
Kyle, you just had a birthday.
I did.
Just Friday. We're recording on Sunday. You had a birthday Friday.
I did.
29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
29. Did you have a good birthday?
I did.
Yeah. What'd you do?
Went over to your house, ate cupcakes, watched Planet of the Apes.
Yep, that's what we did.
Yeah.
And you got some presents?
I did.
All right. That's all I want to talk to you. That's all the more I'm talking to you
tonight,
Kyle, because we have a guest in the seat tonight. Okay, so before we start, I'm going to throw it over to the booth, and we're going to hear West Anthony do his thing, and he's going to promote the Shure SM7B microphones. West, take it away.
This episode of the Rock Solid Podcast is brought to you by Shure, the company behind some of the world's most iconic microphones, earphones, and audio products, including the legendary SM7B mic that we use to record Rock Solid. The SM7B offers perfect response for music and speech in all professional audio applications. Used to record Michael Jackson's Thriller album, engineers and artists continue to choose the SM7B for warm and rich vocals. And it also shines on just about anything you put through it, such as guitar, bass, kick drum, horns, and even as a hi-hat mic. For 93 years, Shure has been the go-to company for roadworthy superior sound. Every member of the Rock Solid Podcast is proud to use the SM7B microphone because we care about bringing our listeners the best sound possible.
All right. Thank you, West Anthony and Steve-O Dockerson over there in the booth. This gentleman, if you had a radio when I was growing up, mm-hmm. or if you had MTV, for God's sake, you knew this guy. You knew his band. This is Jack Russell from Jack Russell's Great White. But as I like to call him, he is the voice of Great White. Hello, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Well, thank you for giving us your Sunday night. As I told you out in the driveway before you walked in, I appreciate it. Thanks to your man Robbie for helping me set this up. He was great to deal with.
Thank you. Yeah, Robbie's a great guy, and I appreciate you having me on the show. It means a lot.
You're here tonight because you had a fantastic album come out last year, and I wanted to have you on last year, and it just didn't happen. No fault of yours. It just fell through the cracks on my end. But you have a new album out. This is your newest music in a while. The album's called He Saw It Coming. And let's hear a little bit of this to start. Let's hear the first track of the album. Let's hear Sign of the Times. What a great tune.
Thank you.
That's the way you kick off an album.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I really enjoy that song a lot. You know, I hate to pat myself on the back, but it's a good one.
the voice hasn't lost a second. It sounds terrific.
You know, I take my voice very seriously, and I took lessons for over 30 years. There came a time where my teacher told me, he said, look, you know, it was kind of like that grasshopper moment, right? You know, you've taken the pebble from my hand. You told me I've taught you everything I could teach you, and now it's time for you to start teaching other people. So that's what I do when I have spare time, which is very rare, but I have a select group of students I teach, and I try to give back, you know.
So you're a vocal coach.
Yeah, yeah.
That's terrific.
Yeah, yeah. It is great. I really enjoy it. It's not a money thing, you know. I work because I really enjoy doing it, and I love to have somebody say, God, your techniques really help me sing better, and that is, like, such a cool thing, you know?
Yeah, when people say something like, wow, Robin Zander still sounds great, I'm like, well, he's never stopped singing. And then when they say, this guy doesn't sound so good, I'm like, well, he's not taking care of it.
Well, that's the thing. No. I mean, the voice is just, you know, it's another muscle, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't see somebody going out and running a marathon without stretching their legs out, right?
Right?
And a lot of singers don't do that. They just think they can go out there and sing cold, and then, you know, part all night long, and then go out and sing cold again after a few shows in a row. It's like, you know, it's just not a good thing to do. You don't do things like that. So if you're serious about it,
and you're, I can even tell you, even your speaking voice sounds.
Yeah, and it's pretty rough. We had a show last night, and I was actually we got home like 4 a.m. from San Diego, and I couldn't sleep. So I've been up all night long working on my boat, and you know, that's what I do. I just 24/7 work on my boat, you know, and so I haven't slept. So my voice is actually kind of thrashed right now. But
well, of course,
I will sleep tonight.
I like that the front man for Great White has a boat.
Yeah,
of course he does.
Yeah, it's called Megalodon. My last one was Great White. This one's called Megalodon, which is like the, you know, ancestor of Great White. It gets 60 feet long, can swallow a Great White whole. So, you know,
I think there's a movie. There's a movie coming out this summer about the giant.
I heard about
crazy
that.
Giant shark. We can't tell if it's serious or if
no,
it's a
I heard about
comedy.
That. It's probably gonna be pretty funny. I hope people don't think I named my boat after the movie. It's like, please, no. I was there before. I'm a fossil.
Now, Jack, you're a California guy. You were born in Southern California. A lot of people transplant here, like Kyle and I. We're from Pennsylvania. Brett Michaels, he's from Pennsylvania. Here's the real California guy right here.
Yeah, there's not many of us. I mean, there's a few of you guys who have been Californicated, but I mean, you know, other than that, I don't know. There's a few people. Most of them, people I know, not many. Most people from out of state, you know, from other places. Like Robbie's from Tucson. Mm-hmm. You know, like you say, there are a lot of transplants.
Yeah. Now, your band is Jack Russell's Great White.
Correct.
Because there's another band out there called Great White.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that is the other members.
Right. Mark Kendall, Michael Lardy, Adi Desbro, Scott, some bass player guy, and Tony Alouz.
Yeah.
Or Aloui or whatever. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
And I had...
I just spoke to him. Actually, we had a conversation via the Facebook the other day.
Tony?
Terry Alouz.
Terry, the singer. Terry,
yeah. He's, we actually, we kind of patched things up. We never had really had a problem, but there was a lot of things unspoken, you know?
Yeah.
And we just had a real nice chat, and, you know, we're all good. So, I mean, I never had any bad feelings towards him. I mean, I would have done the same thing. You know, somebody said, hey, we're offering you this job because we don't want to play with the other guy.
Right.
I would say, oh, yeah, sure. You know, why not?
Well, that's actually nice to hear that from you.
Well, you know, I take responsibility for my part in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a mess, and had it been turned around the other way, you know, I had fired guys in my band for the same reasons, you know. But it wasn't so much... why they did it, it was the way they went about it that made me feel bad.
Yeah.
You know? And we don't need to drag all that up. It's been talked about enough times.
Sure, sure.
Suffice it to say, I have no hard feelings, and I wish them only the best, you know, honestly. And I, you know, hopefully someday down the line, maybe, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Mark will give me a call and say, what's up, you know, because I miss Mark.
Because that's your old dear friend.
Oh, yeah. We started the band, you know, 40 years ago, and it'll be 40 years. It was November of 1978.
And the band is named after Mark.
No, actually, the band. Well, that
because that's what I that's what
right,
I
right,
always
right.
hear.
Well, there's my truth. There's their truth, and somewhere in the middle is the truth. Okay, so
let me hear your truth because you're here.
The truth is, I used to call Mark the Great White. That was my nickname for him because I'm a total shark fanatic. I fish for sharks. My boat's named after a shark. I live on a boat. I'm, you know, this pirate guy. I have pirates all over everywhere you look at me.
You kind of look a little Pirates of the Caribbean.
If I had
right
a patch on one eye and a peg leg, you know, and a hook hand and a parrot, I'd be the full blown guy. But you know, so we had this big tall guitar player, and he wore this white jumpsuit that he got from my drummer Gary. He had a carpet cleaning business, and it said Stan on it on the name.
Okay,
so he had this white jumpsuit, and he had his white shock of hair and his white headband. I used to call him Mark Kendall the Great White. And we were out, we were courting our manager, who was working for a label called Enigma, who he'd established through Green World. And Dokken had brought him down to a show at the Whiskey, and he wanted to sign the band to the label. And he said, well, me and Mark went to meet with him at his office, and he said, okay, well, I really like the band, guys. I think you're great. But he goes, what do you think about changing the name? And we were called Dante Fox back then. And me and Mark were like, change the name? We'll lose all our following, like 500 people, you know? I'm like, God, what do you want to call it? Great White. I'm going, oh, we're looking at you like, Great White. Oh, a stupid name. And we said, okay, well, if it's going to get us a record deal, we'll call ourselves The Buzz. We don't care.
Right.
So we went with Great White. And the name actually turned out to be a really cool name after you got over the initial shock of it.
But right.
That's how it was indirectly named after Mark. So I guess he could say it was named after him if you want to say that. But that was how it happened.
And eventually you guys really embraced the name because with the album covers and everything, you know, you didn't shy away from it at all, which is good.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I said, think about it. I said, God, what's more gnarly than a great white shark? I mean, that's, you know, pretty beefy guy. I see him all the time. So, and, you know, trust me, they're as impressive as they are on film as they are in person.
And when you hear the name, you get an image or a feeling about something. What, you know, you're like, this is going to be either nasty or it's going to be tough or it's going to be all those type things. So that's kind of cool. And I like, too, that you guys have a pretty cool logo.
Yeah.
And you kept that logo. Kyle and I talk about logos all the time.
I actually had the original logo. Mark and those guys took the updated version that I had. Sony redo for the 1999 album.
Yeah.
And they wanted to use that one. I said, well, great. I'll keep the old one then. So, yeah, it all worked out well. I mean, I'm happy. I'm hopefully there too. And you know, the name goes on. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I'm hoping that at some point I'll be able to drop the Great White and just go on as Jack Russell.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I would like to do. And
right.
And that's the hope. And that's what we're working on. So it won't be such confusion.
Right. And that would be good for you too. Brand yourself.
Absolutely.
You're the singer.
Absolutely.
I tell people all the time, though, like if I'm going to go see a band and the band is on tour with a singer, but the singer's still active, I'm always going to go where the singer is. You know, right now I'll go see Journey because Steve Perry is nowhere to be found.
Right, sure.
But if Steve Perry was out there touring and I had to choose who I'm going to go see, I'd go see Steve Perry.
Well, you know, and I would say the same thing. And not just because I'm in the situation I'm in or because I'm a singer. To me, that is the one identifiable thing that distinguishes one band sound from another. I mean, really, you know, any decent guitar player can play another decent guitar player's riffs and copy his sound through an amp or guitar or whatever. But you can't copy a voice. A voice is distinct, you know.
Yes.
Well, not all of them.
The good voices are distinct.
Yeah, the good voices are distinct. Well, even some bad voices are distinct, but, you know, they somehow make it, you know.
Yeah.
But there is a certain, you know, a quality that you can't emulate. You know, I mean, the voice is something, you know, in very personal and in and of itself, singular, you know.
Yeah.
So my voice, at least I feel, is when you hear me singing, go, oh, that's Jack Russell. You don't go, God, who is that guy? You know, and
that's...
And maybe I'm just fooling myself, but I mean, I think that to be true. You know, I have my own sound, and as does Terry, you know?
Yeah.
And as much as I didn't want to like them, actually, I told him this in an email. We shot a kite back and forth through LinkedIn or something like that. And I actually watched their video for the first time, their first single, and I was like, I didn't want to watch it, didn't want to like it. And I thought, you know what? It actually sounds really good. I was like, this is a really good song. You know, he sounds really good doing their stuff. So,
well, that's good because a lot of people wouldn't be like that. They'd watch it and just they'd hate it even if it was good. They'd
I have no reason to have.
Right.
I don't carry that kind of weight around with me. It's just, you know,
why
I had
like
hatred, and you know, I don't have room for that in my soul. You know, it's just a black spot.
People are coming to your shows. People are coming to their shows.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy.
It's all good. You know, we're all to make a living on our past, you know, efforts. And,
the foundation
and
that you all built together.
Sure, absolutely. I wouldn't never want to deny those guys that. I mean,
right.
We all were part of something really, really great. I mean, Great White. You listen to the music we made, and like it or don't. It definitely, you know, had an impact for a lot of people, and it touched a lot of people's lives. And, you know, at one time we were all really close. We were all brothers, you know, I'd look back on those days and I just laugh. I had so much fun. And that's what makes me feel sad when I miss Mark. You know what I mean? Yeah. I just miss hanging out with a guy. He's a funny guy. You know what I mean? He's one of the funniest people I know.
The thing I like about Great White is you, even from the beginning, you guys weren't afraid to embrace that bluesy side. You know, you weren't just doing hair metal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Nothing against that. I love that.
No, absolutely.
But you guys, and you guys weren't afraid to do a long song either and let it just flesh it out for 6 or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you got any pushback from the label to, hey, tighten these up, but
no,
it,
you know,
was
what?
Working.
What was really, really cool, and I have to give credit to my ex-manager, Alan Niven, however he set it up, we never had anybody coming down the studio policing our songs. Mm-hmm. We just finished the stuff we wanted to finish, and we turned it in, and that was it.
Yeah.
Like Rock Me, who would have ever thought you're going to come out with a 7-minute and 11-second single at radio?
Right.
What we did, if you look at the album, you'll see every song on one side says 3 minutes, 57 seconds, and the other side says 3 minutes and 58 seconds. Every single song.
Right.
We put the radio single out, it was like 3:58. So the DJs, they started playing this thing. They think it's a 4-minute song.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're going like, man, that was a quick bathroom break. You know, the song's still going. And by the time they figured it out, you know, it was already people getting
phone
calls.
So you didn't put the real time of the songs.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No, we didn't. We fudged every one of them. One side is, I believe it's all 3:57. The other side is all 3:58. And for the video, we actually had to rewrite the song lyrically to shorten it. I mean, there was times when we came out with the video and I'd be on stage live and I'd be screwing lyrics up going, wait a minute, that's the video version. And I'm looking around the band going, no, it stops here.
Well, since we're talking about it, let's just jump. Let's hear a little bit of Rock Me, Kyle. Should be a fifth song in the list.
Let's say 3:58 or 3:57.
It says 7:19, Jack.
Oh, okay.
You're not fooling us.
Oh, no.
Yeah, what happens with some of these bands later on? They decide, hey, let's do a blues album. You know, we'll do blues covers. And you guys, you just always had that bluesy guitar, and just, I mean, and you could do other stuff too. But that, they always had that, was,
you
in
know,
there somewhere.
That I think really was something that Mark and I had when we were together. It just, that just poured out.
Yeah.
You know, it was. And, you know, Mark's always been a very bluesy guitar player. Vincent, his influence is very bluesy, and as were mine, you know. We both got together. I mean, it was initially kind of like, you know, Judas Priest Jr., you know.
Right.
I remember, it was funny because I remember being at the Troubadour one night, and Rob Halford was there with his, the drum tech, and his name is Desmond. And
are you nervous when Rob Halford's in the house?
You know what? No, I wasn't. I walked up to him and I went to go talk to him.
Yeah.
This little short guy, his name was Desmond. I find this out later. He pushed me out. Oh, Rob doesn't want to talk to me. Rob goes, no, come over here. It's all right. I go, you're not going to remember this, but I'm going to open up for you one of these days. 2 years later, I walked up to Rod Halford and I sat Rob Halford and said, 2 years ago, I walked up to you, the Troubadour, and I told you you wouldn't remember this, but I was going to open up for you. He's like, wow, that's amazing. And, I actually became friends with Desmond, the drum tech, who was the guy that was trying to push me off that night.
Right.
We had a good laugh about it. But initially, our first album, if you listen to the first record, it was very, very heavy. And Michael Wagner was, sing Jack Evil, be Jack Evil. So every song was like, you know, it's like, then when we finally got through the One Spitting album, I was able to just sing.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I want to sing. And it was the first record we had done where I really felt like, okay, nobody's producing me vocally per se, and I'm able to sing the songs like I wanted to sing them. And it was I look back on those days as really fond memories. I remember when we're listening back to the Rock Me track, Mark and I were in the studio and we're sitting on the console, you know, our elbows are on the console, we're listening back to the tape, and tape. Yeah, it dates me.
I know. It's
and
crazy.
We're hearing the playback, and I look over and I go, "Dude, this could really be something special." He looks at me and goes, "That was it." And it was, I'll never forget that. It was just like we knew, you know, that was going to be a big song.
Well, let's hear something from the first album produced by Michael Wagner. It's the album's called Great White, and let's just hear a little bit of Stick It. No, I don't. I hope you don't take
it. Sound that much different?
Yeah. But you still on this album, you still haven't found the Great White sound yet.
No, absolutely not. No, and, I was still searching at that point. Yeah, you know, I didn't really know what my voice was. I hadn't found my voice yet.
And I hope you're not insulted, but like,
that
could almost have been anyone at that time.
You absolutely.
Guys, and what's great is, and here's the compliment: when you do find the Great White sound, and you're able to do what you guys want to do. That's when the success came.
Yeah, thank you. And I do recognize that. And that was, I really found my voice on the Once Bitten Numb. I really, like, okay, this is how I sing, you know. And some people never find their voice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they go around, you know, copying somebody else or being somebody else. And fortunately, I was able to find it in the nick of time, you know, as they say. And I've been able to experiment over the years with different sides of my voice and different facets of it, you know, the clean sound, the dark, the low sound, the really highs, and it's still an adventure. It's still a blast. I still love recording. You know, it's kind of, people say, what's it like, you know, playing live as opposed to being in the studio? Well, I always say, well, studio is kind of like masturbating, where, you know, live's like an orgy. It's the same end result, but it's just two different ways of getting there, you know?
That's great.
Bleep, bleep, bleep.
So no bleep in here. Say whatever you want. There's now the second album, Shot in the Dark. This is when you're on, the first album was on EMI, but this is listed as Capitol.
Well, actually the first release of this album was on our own label again. We went out and released it on our own, and then we had a number two single at radio in Los Angeles at KLOS. And Capitol signed us after that. They re-released it, and it did okay. And then we did the Once Bitten album, and then after that it was, you know.
Now, I won't make you told us a story about first listening to when you were six and you got the Help album.
Sure, sure.
And you saw the Capitol Records label. Now you're on Capitol Records.
Dude,
you're on the Beatles label.
And this is the two bands that I loved when I first grew up. The two bands I was listening to.
My
little record player, Beach Boys and the Beatles.
Capitol Records.
And I used to watch a little thing spin around. And one day I'm looking at my record and I'm seeing my name spin around that thing with the same logo. I go, oh my God, this is happening.
Yes.
Just like I was told when I was 6 years old. When I was telling you guys off mic that I had a vision when I was a young child. And it was basically whoever, whatever, God, whatever you want to call it, the universe, something gave me a glimpse of what my life was going to be. And I always knew that it was going to happen. I never had a doubt. And I had told my friends at the Forum, I'll be on the stage one day. And there I was. And I remember going there at soundcheck before the show. And I'm sitting. I went out to watch the guys set up. And I tried to find that second row loge, 22nd row loge seat where I saw Blue Chicole when I was 15. And I'm looking at this. I probably was in 50 feet of it. And I'm looking at the stage. And I'm going, man, Jack, you've come a long way. And I start laughing at myself. I go, yeah, about 1,000 feet over here at the stage. So, I mean, you know, it's just been an amazing life. My life has been truly, truly amazing. And I'm blessed every single day. Every breath I take, I'm like, thank you, thank you, thank you. So
another thing I like about you guys is you guys would always embrace doing a cover song.
Oh yeah,
but
song
not,
to song.
But you wouldn't embrace it in order to release it as a single. It would just be somewhere in there on the album.
You know, it's funny seeing people ask me about one, but Once Bitten, Twice Shy. I go, dude, I never thought that song would be a hit. Never. It broke all the rules. 45 seconds even got to the chorus. I'm going, ah, oh, God. If it wouldn't call Once Bitten, Twice Shy, I wouldn't even be doing this. You know, but the song wouldn't go away.
And it's like one of the. It's you know, there's covers that take on a life of their own. That one, that's, Yeah, I don't. You
it
know,
still won't stop.
I know, and it's. But
I'm not complaining.
Some people only know your version of it.
I know. You know what I mean? Funny, Ian Hunter.
It's a fantastic version of the song. It might be better than the original.
Well, it used to say I. I'm once bitten, twice shy. Right, mm-hmm. Just so people know.
Yeah.
When I was reading this interview that Ian Hunter did, because we knew Ian Hunter, actually. We mm-hmm. rented his drum riser from him for the Judas Priest tour.
Okay.
And we did the song, and Ian Hunter was doing this interview. He's going, yeah, I'm doing these shows, and kids would come up and ask me, how can you play that Great White song? I mean, she just laughed all the way to the bank, you know, but I mean, I thought that was kind of funny. But.
Yeah, I saw Ray Davies. I've seen him many times perform in solo, and whenever he plays You Really Got Me, he goes, here's one by Van Halen.
Yeah.
And then he... I want to play a song off the second album. I want to play a cover off of Shot in the Dark, and then we'll get into White Once Bitten.
This is
we're going to play Face the Day.
This is
from
Angel City.
Yeah, the Angels in Australia.
Australia, yeah.
And then later on in the career, you guys tackle a couple more of their songs.
I love
the Angels. Yeah.
Great band. You know, they were never discovered here.
No.
And it's unfortunate. They're such a great band.
So let's hear Face the Day.
Signs. No love, need protection. Feels like I'm on production line. Daggers are down, cold day. Why does it have to be morning? Cover my head, staying in bed. Too late for luckless warning. I don't want to face the day.
Sounds great.
That's trippy. You know, that song, I remember the first time I heard it, we were at Alan Niven, my old manager, called me up to a gentleman named Kick Van Hengel. He was the head of the international department. He called me up there for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sitting in his office, and they're talking back and forth. I'm just kind of sitting in this beanbag chair going, heck am I doing here? You know what I mean? And so I started listening to stereo, and there was this song on. I'm like, there's the demon. Hey, who is that? And he goes, oh, that's a band called Angel City from Australia. I'm going, man, we should cover that song. Come to find out later on that it was all a big ploy to get me to come in there. So I would listen to the song and go,
oh, hey,
let's do the song. I was like, so it's Jack's idea.
Let you think that it was your idea.
It's like, why don't you just tell me you want to cover the song and save me a drive up the Capitol, you know? And I was like, okay, I didn't need to be brainwashed. It was a great song. But it was funny. That song was, I had nodules at that point in my voice. I had to have surgery. And I couldn't sing high at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting ready to do that end part. I'm like, oh, man, what's going to happen? And we were doing some other song. And also I went to check my voice, and my high voice was there. I go, quick, roll on the Face of the Day. I did the end of it. After it was done, high voice was gone until after I had surgery. Just unreal. It was like, thank you.
You had it just long enough to get it
just
on tape.
Just long to get that part. I don't know how it happened. It was just,
divine intervention.
I'm telling you, it's my whole life. It's my whole life.
All right, here we go. We're now going to move to 1987. We're going to move into platinum territory.
I like that. Can we stay there for a while?
Once Bitten. You guys stay there for a while.
Yeah, we did. No, I've got no complaints.
Now, was this, and then the album that comes after this is called Twice Shy. Was that predestined? Did you know we were going to do this? This is going to be called Once Bitten.
Yeah.
That's going to be Twice
Shy. Absolutely. That's why the little dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But then Once Bitten, Twice Shy is on... The second
album. I know.
Or not the second, but the next album.
What's really weird about that is because from my recollection, and, you know, I remember being in Izzy Stradlin's car, and he's playing me this song. And he goes, I'm going, dude, he goes, check this song out. It's called Once Been Door Shot. I'm like, what? No way. He plays it for him. I'm going, like, you're kidding me, man. Who did that? He goes, that's Ian Hunter. I go, wow. And then somehow we ended up doing it. And I'm not sure whether he spoke to Alan Niven about it. And like I said, my memory is foggy at best back then because I was doing a lot of things I shouldn't do. It's kind of like Wasted Rock Ranger. That was a song that Slash, Duff, and Steve Adler brought me down to Rumbo when they were doing the Appetite album. They go, dude, you got to hear the song. It's the story of your life. I go, what? It's a band called Porky and the Answers. So I'm hearing the song. I go, we got to record that. Wasted Rock Ranger. So I brought it to the band, and he goes, yeah, it's great. Anyway, not to get off topic, but it's kind of the same thing.
I want to ask a couple questions here. Back at that point when everyone, all your friends and stuff are getting signed, where did you guys fall in the mix? Did it take a while for you guys? Like, were other bands getting signed and you're like, what the fuck? Why are we getting...
No, you know what? Oddly enough, we were the first band ever to get a regular rotation on an independent label. Mm-hmm. They were playing Out of the Night when it was on our own EP, released our own label. We were in regular rotation on KMET. I remember Bobby Blotcher come over at a party at Don's house. Him and Don lived in a duplex together.
That'd be Don Dokken.
Don Dokken, right. Yeah. And I was living with Don. And Bobby came over. He's like, well, how'd you guys get on the radio? We got to get on the radio. Because they had their what was that song? You Think You're Tough or whatever.
Yeah. The Rat song,
yeah.
And, you're so tough, I think is what it is.
You think you're tough. You're hot and stone. You think you're tough. Your top's getting on. You think you're tough. Yeah, that's what it was.
So he's wondering how.
He's going, how'd you get on the radio? How'd you get on the radio? I go, I don't know. Alan did it. I got to talk to Alan right now. And he was all in a huff, you know? And I remember then pretty soon they were on the radio too. But it was, we were the first ones ever that were in regular rotation. And we had every label, and we sold 20,000 copies of our EP
in Los Angeles
on our own label. And we had every label in town wanted to sign us. Every single one. It was like have a cigar, right? Oh, we're here to win. We're together as a team. And we had lunch with everybody, you know? I was like, oh, Columbia. I wanted to go with Columbia.
Yeah.
Ron Oberman was the guy at Columbia. And Alan was like, oh, no, we got to go with EMI America. I'm going, who? I really didn't know who they were. Yeah. I'm like, who's EMI America? I never heard of them.
Well, I mean, Columbia, you know. It's
CBS,
Springsteen, Dylan, you know. You know.
CBS. I know who CBS is.
Aerosmith.
I mean, yeah, right.
Right.
Warner Brothers. I know who they are.
Yeah. But EMI America.
Yeah, I didn't know who they were. And so we ended up signing with them. And come to find out, the guy that signed us, Gary Gersh, he wanted to sign us so he could just drive us into the ground so he could get the president's job. Rupert Perry was the president of the label. And he wanted to have the most wanted act just
die,
bite it. And we're on the road with Judas Priest. I remember walking across the street from the sports arena in San Diego to a record store. And I went in there and said, hey, where's the Great White Album? He goes, who? I go, Great White, we're playing tonight with Judas Priest.
So
right,
you should have us front and center.
And I never heard of you guys. So I get on the phone going, hey, what's going on, Alan? And come to find out, long story short, that's what happened. We sold like 100,000 copies because we weren't in any of the stores.
Yeah.
We had the biggest tour of the U.S. the whole year, Defenders of the Faith. Not Defenders of the Faith. Yeah, it was Defenders of the Faith. And we just didn't have any records out there. So we ended up leaving that label, and then we put our own record out again to only get picked up by Capitol, their sister label. And, you know, so instead of us cruising out the 80s like all our friends did, you know, we came in and started making our, you know, cutting our teeth in the late 80s. So it kind of like, you know, peak down.
Right.
So it was a pretty short-lived high for us. But, you know, at this point in my life, there's so many good things on the horizon. I just feel like I haven't done what I'm supposed to do yet. So I'm climbing up that hill again. So
well, and you're still a young guy, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 24. I mean, what are you going to do?
Let's hear the song that kicks off the Once Bitten album. Let's hear Lady Red Light. Now, from this album on, basically, your manager, Alan Niven, and your keyboard player, Michael Lardy, are producing the band.
Yeah, for better or for worse, so yes.
keep it in the family. You do, now, what was, you didn't like some of their production?
I honestly, Mark and I used to go back and forth about this. We wanted to get another producer in because we were always like, God, our contemporaries, our other friends' albums, they always sounded bigger and yeah. louder and just ballsier, you know? And we were like, God, you put a record on, it's like you turn it to 10, and then you put something else's on, it's like you turn it to 2, and it's already louder than ours. You know, it didn't have the punch like a Cinderella record or, you know, we wanted an outside producer, but we were also afraid of our management. I mean, to be honest with you, we were scared to death. You know, it was this control thing. He was one of those type of people that would make you think, you know, well, you couldn't be anywhere without me. And, you mm-hmm. know, so we were really afraid.
And he would get some writing credits here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It started out, you know, helping me out with a couple of lyrics. And pretty soon, you know, it was like, you know, telling me what to do, sing. And I got to the point where I'm like, look, you know what? I had to fire the guy in 96, I think it was. Then we put out the Let It Rock album. And that was like a very freeing experience for me because, you know, I produced that along with Michael and a guy named Dito Godwin. And that, along with the Shelter Me album, which just happens to be re-released a couple days ago. Actually, it's released in the States for the first time. It was only released in Japan. That, to me, was the best sounding record sonically that I had been a part of because we didn't have that... I don't know. The thing with Alan, he's a great guy. I mean, we had our long history. But it got to a point where it just had, the relationship had run its course. He had a different vision of the band than I did at that point. You know, Sail Away album was kind of like, you know, try to make us into the Eagles or something, you know. And I was like, no, I want to rock, you know. And I remember one day we're in his office and he goes, you know, you need to stop moving around so much, man. It looks ridiculous, the guy your age. I'm going like, I'm 35.
Guy my age?
I go, what about Steven Tyler? He goes, he looks ridiculous. I'm like, okay, well, we're not seeing eye to eye here. You know what I mean?
What about Mick Jagger?
Yeah, right. That was his.
What about Mick Jagger in 2018?
And that was funny because that was his big hero, and I didn't even want to go there. You know, I just said, okay, we're not even going to, there's no point in discussing it. So I just called the guys again and say, look, let's have a you know, pink slip meeting.
See, as an outsider who's just buying the albums and reading the credits, I always thought, oh, look at these guys. That's great. They're holding all the, they have all this control. You know, they're getting to produce it themselves and there are managers there. And like, so
well,
I thought,
you know, there was some
was,
of that. There was some of that. Don't get me wrong. There was a point where we were all very much a team, you know, and Alan included. And, but then there became a point to where it got to be more of his control than of ours. And it was like, okay, now you're going in a direction that I don't really want to go. So, hey, guys, look, this is what I want to do, and you guys can either go with me or you can get somebody else to do it. So
you would have been happy if one of the big-name producers that I've read on all those albums, you would have been happy working with one of them.
Absolutely, especially the Hooked album. That was an album I thought, you know what, we just got done with Twice Shy. It was a huge record. Mm-hmm. Now we need to call in the big guns and just really blow this thing up. And what happened? Instead of making a record, well, we should have all been in rehab as opposed to being in the studio. Yeah. I mean, the drum tracks were all taped, cut together, and pasted. You know, I was like in and out, and I had my jaw broken at one point. I had to postpone the record, and we were a mess. It actually is a decent record.
That's funny, because I was going to say, you know, I really enjoyed that
really
album.
It really is a decent album. Some people say it's their favorite record. I'm going, well, you know, if behind the scenes on that one, you would maybe be scratching your head how we managed to pull it off. But, you know, it's the shark. It always kept swimming no matter what, you know, and we managed to squeak out a couple good songs along the way. I mean, the Desert Moon is probably one of my favorite songs that Great White ever recorded as far as an up-tempo rock song. It's one of the songs I love to sing. It's... the message for my message is different than most people would. I think they would think it's more about the song's about going out in the desert, taking a bunch of ecstasy, and you know, by a campfire. I think I need to get into the great details, but we had a lot of fun during the album.
Well,
I
got that one queued up, so let's jump. I think it's 12 on the list, Kyle. Let's hear one of Jack's favorite songs from 1991 from the Hooked album. This is Desert Moon.
Like a heavenly light. Come on, baby, let's take a drive.
Yeah, Hooked kicks ass. It really does. It you really know, and
I have to admit it is a great record. I mean, and I mean that without not patting myself.
Yeah,
on the
yeah.
Record. I mean, just listening to it, I haven't even heard that in many many years.
Put that in the set list.
Oh, it is in our set.
Oh, it is in the set.
I haven't heard the recording.
Okay, you haven't heard the recording. Okay.
No, I haven't. I've been meaning to go back and listen to all our albums. I was just like, God, that would take a long time.
That's the that's the thing about this show when we have people in. No one goes back and listens to their own albums.
I do. I tell
except
you what,
Jack does.
You know what's in it's in my CD player right now is He Saw It Coming. I gotta admit it's still I hadn't burned out on it yet.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, usually I burn out an album about 6 months, 9 months. You know, because I play it over and over and over and over again.
You're living with it.
Oh man, I'm just one of those guys that does everything over and over and over again, right? Yeah. I mean, I was talking to my drummer Gary Holland, who was our original drummer, and we've reconnected, and he's actually doing a Zeppelin project that we're doing in starting in December. And we were talking about something. He goes, remember that day we all lived in this house, and it was one of our roadies' houses, right? Where we just kind of scummed off. I'm like, hey, man, we're moving in, you know? And he lived there with his girlfriend, and he'd go off to work, and then we'd come back from work. We all lived there. And one day I was in the bedroom, and I was playing Snowblind on the cassette player over and over and over by Styx. Snowblind can't live without you. And all of a sudden I hear this, crash. I go out in the room and there's Kendall with his acoustic guitar. He had smashed it against the wall. He goes, I just couldn't hear that song one more time. I had to do something, not to play it anymore. He wouldn't like that though.
Let's hear, I want to hear one more song off Hooked. While this plays, I'm going to go over there and get a power cord that I forgot to bring here. It's right over there. So, Jack, when I get up and walk away, I'm not leaving the show.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'll just take over. No problem.
Let's hear Call It Rock and Roll. It's a fun record. Hooked, you know, is a fun record.
Yeah, it was. This was my favorite video that we've ever done, by the way, Call It Rock and Roll. It was Michael Bay produced it, and it was just a really good example of Great White, all the shenanigans. It was a lot of fun to make, and it was very, very real in the sense of that's how we were, you know, before the show, after the show, during the show. It was a lot of fun. I had a good time doing that.
How did the record label approve this album cover?
Well, you know, initially it was go ahead, great, no problems. Then Kmart decided they weren't going to stock it.
If you've never seen the album cover, it's a giant fish hook, and there's a beautiful naked
Christine
woman.
Christine Rose, yeah, Playboy. She was a Playboy set of
there you go.
And she was naked on this big treble hook with seaweed hanging from it, and it was over. It was taken over a big like a pool, and they made it look like it was the ocean.
Ocean, yeah, it's great.
And, you know, unfortunately, Kmart being what they were back in those days as far as records, you know, we had to acquiesce. And fortunately, they had taken a shot. I don't think they had to reshoot it. If I remember, they took a shot with her submerged, partially submerged, and then they had a full one. It was also a desert.
And that cover works, too. The one which she submerged. Hooks. I mean,
yeah,
that
yeah.
works too. But it's not
the original
as,
cover. Is yeah. So great.
It's great. It is a great album.
Really, really a work of art.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember going down there and seeing this giant treble hook. I'm going, God, I could use that.
Yeah. Everyone who bought this album back in the day was probably thinking, I want to go fishing where these guys go fishing.
Yeah, right. Or at least find out where they get their bait from, right?
You just mentioned you're doing some type of a Led Zeppelin project.
Can you
talk about that? Is
sure,
it a secret?
Absolutely. No, there's no secrets here. What we recorded back in 96, we did an album called Great Zeppelin. It was a Great White's tribute to Led Zeppelin, and we titled it Great Zeppelin. And it was three live shows we recorded. One in Los Angeles, one actually in Santa Ana.
At the Galaxy?
We had the Galaxy, and one was in the Key Club, and one was in Bakersfield. Now, on the cover of the album, it says recorded at the Galaxy, where actually most of it was from Bakersfield. There was a couple from the Galaxy. I don't remember why we did that. Maybe it was because we were trying to stroke some people at the Galaxy. Who knows? But it was mostly from one show, and it was all Zeppelin songs done live. And it was a really, really great record. And people have asked me over the years, why don't you do that again? And I thought, why not? So I talked to my original drummer, Gary Holland, and we decided we're putting something together. It'd be Robbie Lochner, myself, Gary Holland, Dan McNay from my band, and a guy named Michael Oliveri, who was a singer for Leatherwolf, guitar player, keyboardist.
Okay.
And he's going to be doing the keyboards, second guitar, and vocals and whatnot. So it's really going to be amazing. We're going out, we're going to do a different set. We're going to do some of the same songs. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, we're going to do Stairway to Heaven, the classics like that, but we're going to make it a more rocking set than, because I never really realized, but Gary goes, hey, did you really plan this out like this? There's a lot of ballad metal stuff on there. I go, no, I just pick songs that I like. I go, but come to think of it, you know, we could make it a little heavier, so we're gonna do some heavier stuff, like, you know, like Black Dog and Achilles Last Stand, and,
I love
like
Achilles
that.
Last Stand.
I know we do part of that in On Your Knees, and we play that live. We go into part of Achilles I Stand.
Yeah, such a great song.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
I have two songs queued up from that record, and I hadn't listened to this record in a long, long time. I listened to it because you were coming on the show, and so I can't believe how your voice sounds on this record. Like, it's crazy. Like, why didn't Jimmy Page give you a call?
You know, I've asked myself that too. I think he lost my number or something. I don't know what happened. I've never met any of those guys. Isn't that strange? I mean, I've met everybody else. Steven Tyler's a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. I've just, all my idols I have met. And you know, the one band that I was like my favorite band of all time, especially as a vocalist, I've never met.
Wow.
And that's Led Zeppelin. And,
well,
I've never seen them. I had tickets to go see him, and I thought there was a party in high school. There was a party now. Okay, I'll go see him next year.
Yeah.
Bonzo died before I got to see him. So,
yeah.
Yeah, my bad.
Well, let's hear Ramble On. And this is incredible, the way you sound on this. Wait till you hear this, Kyle.
But now it's time for me to go. The autumn. Sometimes I grow so tired.
Okay, yeah, I can't even talk. Okay, Kyle, there's Jack Russell. What do you think of that? Give him your true opinion. What do you think of that?
That was great. Right? Like if you told me that was actually Led Zeppelin live, I'd
right?
Like, yeah.
No, it's funny.
Like it's so funny. Like at points it sounds like Jack. I can hear Jack Russell, but then it's just like I'm like, well, is this a trick? What's going on here? This is incredible. Like, well, were you trying? Were you?
Well, of course, I was trying to sound as I can. I
yeah. Mean, that
was
well, you
point.
Can do it.
That was the point.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, for whatever reason, our voice has the same timbre. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not hard for me to emulate. And plus, he was a very big influence of mine. I'm almost, and I mean this with all humility. I don't mean. All my talent I have is given to me as a gift, and I treat it as such, and I don't take credit for it. The only credit I take is for having the sense to use it and take care of it. But everything else, gift. I have the ability to, it's almost like a impressionist, mm-hmm. impersonator. You know, I mean, I can pretty much cop a lot of people's voices, you know. And fortunately, you know, to sing something as amazing as his stuff. I mean, when we did these shows, I was up there just going, my God, how it must have felt to be those guys on stage
right.
with all these catalogs, these amazing songs. I mean, you could almost, I almost picture myself in his shoes going, wow, these are big shoes.
You're having an out-of-body
you
experience.
You know, it was amazing. And I'm really proud of that album. I really am. There was no fixes on it. I didn't go in the studio and fix anything. That was all live. I don't know if I could do that right now at 57, but at 35, I would have did that.
You know? That's what I was going to ask you. This is 22 years ago.
Yeah. And I still sing this stuff. Don't get my voice has not really changed much. I've lost a couple notes, but those are notes like only the dogs can hear anyway. So,
I hope you bring that show into the Los Angeles area.
You know,
I know two guys that are going to be calling up Robbie.
You know, it's funny because we've had no luck in LA. We first put it out in 96. Well, this was just what we heard. It was from my agent. Well, they don't want to have you guys come in because they're afraid that the regular tribute bands, people won't want to come see them anymore.
Because you'd be too good.
I mean, come on, really? So, you know, we've got offers all over the states. We're going to do those, and I'm sure there will be some shows in Los Angeles. If I have to put it on myself, I'll do it.
As close as you get, we will go there.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And then I'm going to play another one, and I picked When the Levee Breaks just because I always like that song.
No, so me too.
Let's hear When the Levee Breaks. It's insane.
He saw rain and the levee's gone to break. When the levee breaks, have no place to stay.
We got a little impromptu. Jack was singing along there. That's okay with us.
The mic was hot.
That's
on
okay with us. What were you going to say, Kyle?
The cover's great.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? No, that was a guy in France, a guy named Eric Hubbard, who has taken, we were actually best men at his wedding in Vegas, but he has subsequently taken all our records and licensed them and made 19 different best subs. And we'll just take all these songs and put them in different orders. We'll call it something else. So it's kind of frustrating, you know, but I figure it's if people are going to bootleg our stuff, well, you know, it's just more for people to hear. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. I just hate seeing somebody go, I bought this record in a different name. It has all the same songs on it, but they're just in different order. You know,
right.
So let the buyer beware, you know.
The sale, you know, we're brushing by some stuff, but Psycho City came out in 92 after Hooked, and it has some good songs on it. Were you happy with that record?
You know, that was a... For the most part, yes. Some of it was a little droney for me. You know what I mean? Where is this going? Why is it still going? The vocal stopped an hour ago.
Right.
I mean, there was some great stuff what's that song? Maybe Someday.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that tune. I mean, Psycho City was a great song. And there was some good stuff on it, but to me, it just wasn't... It wasn't our best stuff. We could have, you know, had we had a real producer that had I don't know. I think it was one of those things where rushed to get it done. I mean, we actually recorded the record up in a house in San Ynez just so our manager could carry on his affair with his girlfriend. I didn't know at the time, but she lived up there.
Okay.
So we rented a house in San Ynez. We stayed there for a month, spent buku amounts of money. And, you know, we could have stayed at home, but I found out later on that he had a mistress up there, and that's why we were at this house spending tons of money on this record. So, you know, it was just a lot of stuff came to light in that point. We had a fun time making it, but...
Were you guys in better health than you were when you recorded Hook?
Oh, yeah. I had gotten sober. Steven Tyler had helped me get sober in 92, and that lasted 8 years. That is what kind of set everything in motion for me to change management.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I'm done with this. I've been sober for X amount of years now. I don't need anybody controlling my life. You know, so, but back to the record. I'm sorry, I digress. But back to the record, you know, it's very fragmented, at least from my perspective. I don't think it's a bad album. I just don't think it was a great album.
Yeah.
You know,
and
the
not
cover
as funny.
Art was like, he wanted to call it Rose Motel because it was some kind of a jab at Axl, because Axl had fired him. It's like, look, the album's called Psycho City. You're going to put Rose Motel in there because it's a jab at Axl? What is that about?
Yeah. No one's going to get... I never got anything.
People
I never
kept
got
going, the old Rose Motel album. I'm going, no, it's called Psycho City. We had a cover for it. You know, I designed this cover. We had all these crazy Inquirer things. We taped them all together, arm, arms and leg this boy, somersaults 10 miles to save dad. I mean, you know, what's he going to do when he gets there?
Yeah,
I mean, all these crazy things, just random.
Yeah, I always felt, I'm like, the title of the album and the cover don't work in
nothing
together.
To do with anything. It's just like ridiculous. That was like, you know, okay, maybe this is not quite the way it's supposed to work out. And then after Sail Away, you know, that was it. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to turn to Don Henley. I don't care how many records he sold. Yeah.
Sail Away comes out in 94 after Psycho City, but before the before Let It Rock and before the Led Zeppelin album.
Right.
And Sail Away, that was a head scratcher for me when I'm like, a new Great White. And I
Bail Away. The song was okay, but everything else. See, I wrote songs like, what was it? I know, I'm telling you, Don, feels to be alone. Those songs that were supposed to be Aerosmith and poppy, and they just came out to be all strums, I'm old man sitting on a chair. You know what I mean? And we went out on stools for the first half of the set. I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I in this band anymore? You know, this is not my band anymore.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's band, and I'm just singing for it. So that's when I finally got sick of it, and I told Mark, I said, dude, this is what I want to do. And he's like, I'm with you, man. So we pull everybody together and, you know, plan the total, hostile overtaking, you know, overthrow the government and the coup, you know, and that was like the happiest day of my life from so many years. We went and did the Let It Rock album. It was like kids in a candy store. We had so much fun, man, that record. I remember I sang 6 lead vocal tracks and backgrounds in one night.
And I feel bad because I can't find that album. That's really hard to find.
It's not on
iTunes either.
Really?
Yeah.
You might be able to find it on YouTube. That's where I would go look for it.
Then I'm not paying for it then.
Right. Well, you know, that doesn't bother me. I'm not making any money of it anyway.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know
what I mean? Okay. Well, then I'll go to YouTube.
Who cares? Play
Jack
it,
Russell said I could.
Yeah, anytime you want.
So I'm going to jump to 1999. You guys get signed by John Kolodner to Portrait Records. It was under the Columbia Epic umbrella. And at that time, John Kolodner was grabbing a bunch.
I was in Sony.
Sony.
Yeah.
He was grabbing a bunch of you guys, Rat and
Cinderella.
Cinderella and
Samantha Seven.
Yep. Yeah, that was, I love that record.
That's, you tour with them. We tour with us.
That's CeCe DeVille.
CeCe DeVille. Cecil. Yep.
Yeah. That was a great album. I still tell
great
people.
Band.
Sometimes I'll give that to people. And, you know, if I tell them it's CeCe DeVille's album, then they're going to think,
right.
And they're not going to, but sometimes I'll give that to people and they'll go, that was great. Who is that? What is that?
Right.
And I tell them like, are you kidding me? I love it. I'll let you hear that, Kyle.
We tour with them. They actually opened up for us in Europe. We pretty much share bands. We had my rhythm section and Michael Arty. They would do double duty, and then, you know, they'd play with Great White in the end. So it was really, really cool. Being on a bus with CeCe, you know, through all of England, it was hysterical. He was a funny guy.
A character, I would say.
Oh, totally. He's like a parody of himself, you know, which is awesome.
So the lineup for this album, it's Jack Russell, it's Mark Kendall, it's Mike Lardy, Sean McNabb, and Audie Despreau. Is that a classic lineup, kind of?
Oh, for Let It Rock?
And for Can't Get There From Here.
Oh, Can't Get There, absolutely. That, to me, that was, Sean was the man like 10 years. I mean, you know, he, solid bass player, great guy. I can't say enough good things about him. You know, we had a parting of the ways at one point just due to lifestyle changes and you know, but that's nothing to do with his talent or his person. He's a great guy, wonderful bass player.
You got Jack Blades from Night Rangers producing this.
Yeah,
Now, is he put together with you? Does John Kolodner recommend that Jack produces?
No, actually, I brought that up because Jack had hired me to come up and do background vocals on the Night Ranger 7 album.
Okay.
So I did all the high parts. He wanted me to come in and sing all the high notes. So I came down there, he gave me some money, I sang all the high parts. And so we kind of rekindled our relationship again, which we had back in 86, we opened up for them. Or it was 87. It was for the Once Bitten album when that first started out. We opened up for Night Ranger. And so that's how I knew him. And when he had me come up to do the vocals, we started hitting off. We became friends again. And then we both knew John. He knew John. I said, I'm trying to get a deal with John. He said, well, you know, what if I produce a record? I said, okay, I'll talk to John about it. So I mentioned to John, light bulb, okay, great idea. We went up there, wrote some songs together, put a demo together. And actually, a couple of the demo songs that we did, I was so happy with the vocal performance, I actually kept them. I said, I'm not singing these over again.
Oh, nice.
We had to hire Myron Grombacher to play drums because Audie was in no shape at that time.
Okay.
He was all messed up on meth.
So was Myron on the demos? Is he on the actual album? But
Myron's
not
on the album. He's on the album. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think we give him special thanks, but you know, we didn't want to, you know, say anything about Audie. And John wanted me to fire Audie, and I said no. John, I go, I can't do that. You know, man, he's been my oldest friend.
Yeah.
You know, I said, I'll make sure he's got it together for the tour. I go, I'll hire Myron. He goes, I love Myron. I go, cool, I'll use him on my first solo album. So I go, I love him too. So,
and Myron's from the Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar.
Yeah.
And I mean, what a drummer.
What a great drummer.
Frightening. I mean, just, I played, he played.
I don't think he's drumming right now.
Song.
I don't think he's drumming right now.
I saw him in Chrysler, this is the last I heard. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
But he's amazing. He's amazing. Yeah. I used him on the Shelter Me album, and then I used Vinny Cagliuto on my second solo album. So, I mean, these guys are, you know, chop city. And having Myron play with the band really stepped the band up a notch. And it really made Audie a better drummer because he had to come in and play
and
Myron's chops. Yeah. And I think that really helped him as a drummer.
Yeah, Jack co-wrote six songs on this album.
Yeah.
Don Dokken co-wrote two or three on this album. And let's kick it off the way the album kicks off. Let's hear Rolling Stoned. Jack just, Jack Blades, the other Jack, he just seems like a guy that's just writing music and doing stuff.
Guy's amazing.
24/7.
Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. I mean, what was really cool about Jack, he wasn't, he would give me ideas. He was like, for this song example, he goes, you know what, Jack, you need to write a song about, go back to your friends in high school and just talk about, you know, what happened when, you know, the band broke and what was going on then. So I went back to my office at my studio and I sat there with the music. I'm listening to it, and I'm coming up with a melody line for it, and I start writing down the words. I'm using real people in there, and I'm thinking about how it was back then, mm-hmm. how it was when all of a sudden they're playing my music, you know, on the radio, and people are cranking the videos, going through the stereo, it was all loud, and all my friends are going, wow. And then I thought about, okay, what are they doing now? And I remember some friends of mine, what they were doing. Like, one guy was building houses, and you know, the guy was doing jail,
mm-hmm.
you know, another guy was, you know, bought a gun. I said, Brentley bought a gun. Was it when he was shooting heroin, you know? And,
yeah.
There was a girl named Jamie. She was living out in the desert. Just, it was just about my life and about people like that. So it was really cool. He didn't say, these are the lyrics or, you know what I mean? He would just say, try this, you know? And then some songs, of course, we worked the lyrics together and it was a lot of fun. I mean, Jack was, he just a boundless, talk about, to put me times 10, you know what I mean? And he would tell me, slow down, Ridley child. I'm thinking, dude, really? You're bopping around like, you know, Mick Jagger on LSD or something, you know?
Well, this is a solid album. I was so...
That's my favorite Great White album ever.
And my
that, favorite... That band, anyway.
This will sound weird. My favorite... It won't sound weird. My favorite Great White song is on this album. I love this song, Silent Night.
Silent Night. That was one of the songs I kept. That was one of the lyrical performances. I said, you know what? I'll never be able to sing that song as good as that, so we're keeping that and Saint Laurent. Those are the two vocals I kept.
And Saint Laurent's fantastic too. And I can listen to Silent Night just on a loop over and over and over again.
That song is about a girlfriend of mine in high school.
That's exactly the feeling that I get, and that's exactly the feeling everyone's going
to
get.
I was telling you about my son. She was the one that gave birth to my child.
Let's hear it. Let's hear Silent
Night.
That's
what the song was about.
Every now and then I like to pick up the phone and make a call down memory lane. Well, how you been? Well, baby, you could say I've been lonely too. I've been picking up the pieces ever since the day I left you sleeping on Motel Road. I heard you had two kids, got married, it was quite the show. You're my one stone true regret. Silent night. I say a little prayer for you on this silent night.
got a chill listening to that.
No, thank you. Yeah, it makes me my eyes well up when I listen to that song. You know, I got to give props to Myron though, because he had to come in and play to a song that was already recorded to a click.
Yeah.
So to have a drummer have to do that is really hard to do. I mean, I know a lot of drummers that are, you know, rated number one drummers that couldn't do that.
And Myron did it.
Myron did it, just and to two songs, you know, and yeah, guys, I can't say enough good things about him. But yeah, that song is a really, really it's a touching song.
Yeah, I didn't. It was so hard to. I mean, I started it at the beginning, but I could have dropped it in anywhere. Like that line about we just stuck together like the earth sticks to the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a great line.
I know. We just stuck to each other like the earth sticks to the sun. Yeah.
Such a great song.
Taught me how to laugh, learn how to cry. It was easy as 1, 2, 3. We were lucky and wild back then. Just happy to be.
Yep. I love that you know the lyrics, and probably haven't sang this for a long time.
I haven't sang the song ever live. Only in the
Never
studio.
Sang it live.
No.
Just that one take we just heard.
Yeah.
Maybe you put that one in the set list.
Yeah. You know, I would like to. I mean, we're changing the set.
You got to appeal. You got to appeal to those people that never saw. I've never seen Jack Russell before, and then you go, and then you don't want to disappoint. It's right. Tough.
Well, they go like, yeah. Well, I mean, you'd be out there playing for 5 hours.
Exactly.
The catalog we have. It's like, why don't you play this? Why don't you play that? It's like, well, because we can't play 24 hours a day for 2 weeks. You know, right. And I got to sleep. You know, even I have to sleep sometimes. You know.
Let's hear one more off of Jack's favorite Great White Album from this time period, and my favorite Great White Album. Let's hear Don Dokken co-wrote this. Wooden Jesus. Great tune.
Down the road in my car, a wooden Jesus on my dashboard. Go to work to stay alive. I'm just a sinner trying to survive. Yeah, we commit all those deadly. But I don't worry, cause I got my friend. I got my wooden Jesus in my car. He's always with me, never too far. Yeah, my wooden Jesus forgives me. I'm a sinner.
And this album, this didn't perform the way it should have, the way you probably hoped it would.
We sold like 106,000 copies in 1999, which was
that's
amazing.
Not shabby.
We had a number six single at radio, and we would have gone farther. Kalodner had every intention of seeing the second single, which Ain't No Shame, which he called the Miney Song, you know? and which I thought was going to be a huge hit. And just they ran out of money. They took the money they made on our record and they put it into Rat's album because their album was tanking and they paid a lot of money to sign them. They wanted to get it back.
Yeah.
And I would have been happy with that too because I had a couple songs on the album that I wrote or co-wrote. Yeah. And
the Rat
I would
album,
love to see them both do well, but it still tanked.
And the Rat album was produced by Richie Zito, who was like the A-list at that point. So they probably shelled out a ton of money to get him.
You know it, And you know it was just one of those slap in the faces. You know, and I was like, okay. And that was when I finally said, you know what, I need to do something else right now at this point in my life. And that's when I decided to break the band up. I told the guys, look, I'm leaving. I'm going solo. You guys do whatever you want. Keep the name, get a new singer, do what you want to do. And they said, no, it's not going to be, won't be Great White without you. So every disbanded, I went and did the For You album and did my solo tour. And that bit the dust pretty fast. I was like, okay, and nobody really cares about me doing good old contemporary stuff.
Yeah, this is a very, For You is a very poppy.
Real poppy. And it was, you know, and it was... It just wasn't, the world wasn't ready for that at this point. I mean, CHR, I mean, we beat Celine Dion at the first week at ads, but nobody's buying records.
No.
So it didn't matter. I mean, Jack Russell, who's this guy with tattoos singing all these great songs, but they're like, he's a rock singer.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, damn if you do, damn if you don't. So, you know, I eventually said, okay, look, I'm out on the road anyway. I'll call Mark up, have Mark come out. We'll call Jack Russell's Great White. And we'll play some of my stuff and we'll play a couple of Great White songs. And we did that. And then, you know, February 20th, 2003. And, you know, after that, everything changed.
Yeah. It was, we're talking about the station.
Nightclub Fire.
Nightclub Fire.
Yeah.
The, now, when I say this, this is hard for some people to understand, maybe not. When I saw that on TV, the footage of that, that that affected me more personally than watching 9/11. And I'll tell you why. Is when I watched 9/11, I couldn't get my mind around that. It almost looks like a an action movie. It looks like it's just, you just can't believe it. It looks.
I know. I thought the same thing when I saw the second plane hit. I was like, what? What? That can't be happening.
Yeah.
Really?
And you can't fathom what's going on. It's now, too huge. With the Station Club and Station Nightclub fire, that's where I would have been there. I would have been at that show.
Yeah, I know.
I've been in many clubs like that. Out here, you know, the Roxy, the Whiskey, all those clubs are that size.
Yeah.
And it was just really, that was really a horrific thing. I mean, obviously for you. I mean, but to watch it, it was just, I was just like, I can't believe
this. No, I can't imagine, you know, I know how horrifying it was and still is for me. And I don't, and I'm one of the lucky ones, you know. I mean, I made it out alive, and a lot of my friends didn't, you know.
One of your bandmates didn't make it.
I lost two other dear friends that I didn't even know where, I didn't know they were even there until the next day I saw their pictures on television. And,
it
never gets any easier, you know. It never does, and it never will, nor should it.
No.
Out of respect for my friends, and you know, and there wasn't a single person that I saw on the television that next day that I didn't know in some way. I mean, mm-hmm. You go a place, you play it for 20 years, you get to know everybody.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if not by name, by face, of course, you know.
And I can't imagine, the guilt that
horrifying. I mean, and you know, the horrible thing is I just wish there would have been something I could have done to stop it. Like, if I would have done this, or if I would have gotten there earlier, or if I would have noticed this, or if I would have checked that, or, you know.
Yeah, and that's just the game you play with yourself. I mean, I've been in a few.
Every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
I went into
insanity.
Yeah. It's like when you're in a car accident and you're like, if I would have left the house 5 minutes later or 5 minutes earlier.
What if I would have canceled the show because my voice wasn't feeling good. What if I would have done that?
Yeah, whatever.
What if I didn't get a tattoo that night and put the guy in the
That's
guest
just list? A mind game you play that's not going to get you anywhere.
I know. And it's something I've dealt with for, you know, 15 years now.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't get any easier. And with that said, you know.
And so right after that, everything just stops. Everything has to stop. What are you going to do? How are you going to? You're not going to be able to go do a show the next night.
No, you know, I never really pictured myself going back on stage again.
I would believe it. Yeah.
And ever smile again.
Mm-hmm.
How could I possibly do that? And you know, thank God that my ex manager. How many does it have? Like a Crayola box of 64 crayons. My ex-manager thought of the idea of doing the benefit tour, which was, you know, a wonderful idea, and it helped a lot of people, and it brought awareness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we worked for 2 years doing that, Mark and myself and some other hired guys that we playing with us. And, you know, I'm it's never will be enough, you know, and...
But I mean, that was therapy for you guys to go do that.
Absolutely, because there was no other way I would ever went back on stage. You know, that was as altruistic as I could possibly get doing that. I mean, it was for somebody else. Mm-hmm. For myself, I just would have retired. So, you know, forget about it.
Have you ever played in Rhode Island since then?
No, I never have. And you know what? And it's not because we haven't had offers.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of respect.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people, I don't know a lot, there are people that... blame me for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing I can do about that.
No.
You know, and if that helps them cope with their grief, then
if they have to hate, if they have to be mad at you for the rest of their life, you're okay with that.
I'm okay with that.
If that helps them.
It devastates me. You know, it really does. I don't, cause I'm not a malicious person. I'm mm-hmm. not a violent person. I don't wish anybody, you know, I'm the kind of guy that opens the door for a fly to go out. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I would never, ever intentionally or, you know, in any way, shape or form harm another individual.
No way.
I mean, and that's not what my music's about,
mm-mm.
you know, and that's not what music is supposed to be about. And for that to be, you know, part of my legacy is horrifying to me, you know, but like I said, if that helps some people, you know, grieve, then that's okay. That's what God wants from me, you know? And I just have, my life is already laid out. I just have to keep walking the steps.
Now, were you at the time of that, were you clean and sober at that point? Were you?
That point, no, I was going in and out. I was drinking. I wasn't doing anything other than that, but I wasn't, taking real good care of myself. I had a fiance at the time, and she wouldn't put up any of the monkey business. Mm-hmm. I mean, she would, you know, it'd be okay if I drank, but I wasn't drinking on the road because it messes up my voice. You know, it's just something I
was just wondering if this horrible incident
afterwards
pushed
I went spiraling down like worse than you can mm-hmm. imagine. I was like, I was literally almost catatonic for 3 months. I mean, I could not stop crying. I mean, they tried to get me, I went to so many psychiatrists and therapists and this pill, that pill, these pills, drinking. And mm-hmm. I mean, I was literally, you know, drinking myself into a coma, you know, and I finally, when the benefit tour thing happened, I finally got the will and the wherewithal to pick myself off the ground and go out and do it. And it was a struggle.
That first show must have been, I can't imagine that the first show, you got to go out there. And okay, let's have rock and roll fun, everyone.
You know, it was. I remember like it was yesterday. It was actually a big show. There was a lot of people there and a lot of supportive people. And I was so thrilled because I was so scared. Yeah. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what was proper to do. I didn't know what to say.
Did anyone protest these shows? Was there any backlash? Or did you stay away from it?
I don't really remember, to be honest with you. My memory's pretty foggy at best anyway. I mean, it kind of runs in my family, you know, which is great.
You seem pretty sharp tonight.
I'm a pretty sharp guy.
Yeah.
I mean, if I look, okay, what did I do 3 days ago? I'm like, I don't know. I got up and I ate. Like, I'm supposed to take a shower. Yeah, I guess I took one. You know, I call that my recent recall.
Short-term
recall. See, I can't think of that right now. My short-term recall is really short-term, as you can tell. It is kind of messed up. But then, you know, I take a lot of antidepressants and things like that because I just have to, you know, in order for me to cope with being me. You know, I've not anybody doesn't know, but I have bipolar disorder, and you know, so I take medications for that and for depression and anxiety and yada yada yada. But I'm all better now.
Well, you're still here. Thank you, and I want to thank you for talking about.
Oh no, you know what, man? It's I'm not the only one that's affected by bipolar. My son has it. You know, many friends of mine have it, and especially in this industry.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we're all a bit bipolar. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing. Right. We have a real job, you know. But it's who I am, and I'm a pretty transparent guy. Okay. I want people to know who they're talking to. That's why I write songs about my life, because that's the only thing I really know about, you know?
Well, let's get back to the music. Let's get back to some fun. Got this album, Back to the Rhythm. This is a reunion album, right?
Yeah, it certainly was.
Is it everyone?
Everyone except for Tony. I mean, Sean was back in. It was a lot of fun making this record. It was a lot of fun.
Well, let's hear, what song do I have? I have the title track, Back to the Rhythm. Let's hear it.
I figured that one. You know, it's funny, speaking of bipolar disorder, that song was originally called, when I'm on the top and I'm back to the bottom again. It feels like I'm on the top and I'm back to the bottom again. And John Claudin says, I don't really like that. Change the chorus. So we changed it to, back to the rhythmic one. Yeah. And then we ended up passing on the second Sony deal, but we kept the song nonetheless.
Yeah, and you got Jack Blades was a co-writer on that song too.
And then, actually, he co-wrote a few of the songs that we had we saved from the demos from the second second Sony album, but we didn't use it.
You guys must have been having quite a creative songwriting period.
It was
at that
great.
Point.
It was great. Yeah, I mean, you know, ever since the Great White A.N. after Niven, you know, the things really blossomed for the band musically. I mean, we really found our own and musically, we came into our own, and you know, we found in the later years with the band, myself and Michael were doing, pardon me, a lot of the writing, and Kendall was more on the periphery, until I think the last album, it was more the three of us, but for a while there was Michael and I were doing a lot of the writing, and Kendall was kind of going through this, for lack of a better word, a Steve Ray Vaughan phase. And it really didn't fit what we were doing. So the ideas he brought forth were like, I don't know, we got this idea over here we're really liking. So it was kind of, I'm not going to say, I don't want to go out and say I ran the band, like I said before, but, you know, I was your typical type A personality, you know, and I was very, Hitler-esque, that's not the right word, but I was, you know, very much a force to be reckoned with when it came down to what I wanted this band to be like, you know, and I left that on no uncertain terms. I don't mean that in derogatory to anybody else, and I'm sure somebody's going to come up and say, oh, well, it wasn't that way, but I don't mean that in a bad way.
Right.
I just mean, you know, you can't have a band cannot be a democracy. I don't care what anybody says. If a band's a democracy, you'll never get anything done. Well, I don't like that shirt. I like this shirt. Well, I don't like that. I want this shirt. Somebody's got to make a decision and say, look, this is a song we're going to do. You're not going to vote on it because it's just not going to happen. So nothing ever gets done. So, you know, it was kind of like there was never any ties. It was kind of like it was a majority, but if there was a tie, it was kind of like, okay, well, this is where we're going to go. And everybody was fine with that.
Yeah.
And it worked for quite many years until, you know, the person that was making the decisions was no longer capable of making decisions anymore because he was completely out of his tree, which would be me. You know, and then it came to the point where, you know, I had severely injured myself from poisoning my body so much. My body said, no, stop, you know, burst colon, you know, coma.
Yeah, how does that happen? How does your
steroids, pain pill abuse, you know what I mean? You're shutting down your whole digestive tract, you know what I mean? And you know, just taking mass amounts of drugs and alcohol and your body just finally says, look, dude, I'm not doing this anymore and this is what's gonna happen to you.
And you fell. And did you have a fall?
I had a fall. That way I shattered my left femur on stage. I finished the show on a stool, lost like 3 units of blood. They put me in an ambulance, rushed me to the hospital, did emergency surgery. I lost 2.5 inches off my left leg. After that, I ruptured my colon on a flight from the East Coast to LAX. I don't remember.
That's not a good place to do that.
No, and you know, nobody in the band weren't even looking at me. They're just thinking, oh, he just wants drugs. He's faking it. They didn't know what was going on. And you know, I understand that now. But at the time, I was like, God, man, these guys are so uncaring. And you know, and at that point, they probably really wish I would have died because it would have been a little easier on them. You know, like, she's dead. Forget it.
Yeah.
So, And I mean that, and I don't mean that just on hostile, because I don't have anything against them. And then, you know,
yeah, it was just the situation. It was the way it was going.
They didn't know how
then.
They didn't know how to deal with
sure.
it. They didn't know how to. How could we fire Jack? How could we? Who's going to do it?
Now at that point, are they all on the straight and narrow? Maybe not as bad as you, but everyone's doing something.
You know, I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know what they were doing.
All right.
And that's I was
not looking for gossip.
No, exactly. So. But, I mean, I know I wasn't functioning and doing things I should, and I was bringing everybody down. I was canceling tours because I'd get ready for I'm coming back in May. Oh, broke something else, you know what I mean, falling down drunk. You know, how many times are these guys going to go, yeah, okay, he's coming back. So they asked if I could get somebody. I said, well, look, why don't you get somebody to replace me? So they asked Janie Lane. Janie said they didn't want to do it. So I called Janie and said, Janie, do me a favor, man. For me, do it. He goes, okay, I'll do it for you, Jack. And
They did go out with Janie?
They did go out with Janie, yeah. And it was really, really good. Janie did a really great job. But, pardon me.
Can I get you water, Jack?
Yeah, please. Yeah, that or another set of lungs. No. So, he went out and he did, and he did a really great job. And you know, then they he didn't want to do that anymore. He was doing something else, and they got they asked me if they could get this gentleman Terry Lewis and from XYZ. And I wasn't really familiar with the band. I knew the one song they had, and I said, "Yeah, well, sure, you know, great, go ahead." And then I never really gave it too much of a thought, mm-hmm. except when people weren't returning my phone calls. I'm like, "Well,
uh-oh."
You know, I hadn't spoke to anybody in months and months and months. And I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of weird, you know. My manager's going, "No, everything's fine. You come back, we'll just fire everybody if they don't want you back." Well, yeah, okay, whatever. So he's playing both ends against the middle.
Yeah. Right?
So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to get ready. Whenever I'm ready to come back, I'll come back. So I get ready, and I'm saying, okay, I'm ready to come back.
And are you really ready?
I'm really ready.
You're ready to go.
It was 2011, December.
You're feeling good?
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, you know, nobody calls me. So I just say, you know what? You're fired. I put out a post on my Facebook page, told everybody I'm firing the guys because I was the president of the corporation. And Michael Lardy and Audie Desbrill, they were hired by the corporation to play for the band. They weren't actually members of the corporation. They were hired by Shark Touring.
Okay.
So long story short, they put out this huge thing. You know, he's a Vanquish, a colostomy bag, and all this stuff, you know. And it was this horrible back and forth, tete-a-tete, you know what I mean, who could hurt each other the most and say the worst things about each other. It was horrible.
Yeah.
And these guys are my best friends in the world.
And we've seen a lot of bands do this
when the
lead singer goes or when there's a parting of the ways. Mm-hmm. There's always that stuff, so.
It's just terrible, you know, that I had to go there. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, you know what I mean? But the only thing that I was upset by was that nobody had the nerve to call me up and say, "Dude, look, we don't trust you.
Mm-hmm.
We believe you're going to mess up again. We don't want to risk it.
Yeah.
We don't want you to sing this anymore." I would have said, what was I going to do? I would have said, I would have had to take it.
Yeah.
You know, and we could have said, okay, well, then what are we going to do about the name? Then we would have.
Because that's important.
Well, of course. We all had
You have financial stake in that name. Everyone does.
You know, and there was one point where, you know, I had walked away. I had broken up the band. I said, that's it. There's no more Great White. This is our farewell show. We did an album called Thank You, Goodnight, the farewell concert.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it was like, well, no, it's our band now. And you don't have any right to the name. I was like, okay, well. Clearly, we all have something.
Is it hard to do that show when you know that no one's talking really?
Oh no! This was the farewell, the Thank You Goodnight show. That was prior.
That was before
I went on my solo.
I'm just getting my timeline straight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
I'm sorry, I'm a little confusing, but
no.
That was a little. That was before, and that was before. That was 2001.
Okay,
going
that's
2002.
Way before. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's way before.
So. Anyway, so this all happened in 2011, and it was December 11th or December something. It was after my birthday, and so come to find out that they had filed for the trademark on December 6th, the day after my birthday, and I didn't know about it until after I had made the post that I was starting a new Great White, yada yada. But they had gone behind my back and filed for the trademark without me, so. You know, one thing led to another, and you know, we're all guilty of not being the greatest human beings at the time, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not trying to make them sound, I know it may sound like that to people out there, but I'm not trying to dig at the guys. I'm just telling you what happened from my perspective.
I think you sound like you're being totally honest. I don't think you're shitting on anyone or bad-mouthing anyone.
I'm not trying to.
You're certainly not.
They did what they needed to do.
Sure.
And I would have done the same freaking thing if it was been me.
And currently...
And I have done.
Yeah. And currently, they're out as Great White and you're out as Jack Russell's Great
exactly.
White.
And we're all having fun. I assume they're happy. I'm happy, you know, and I wish them nothing but the best. You know, I really do. They're making great music. They got a great singer. You know, they're all great players, and you know, we had a wonderful time together. You know, we spent, God, most of our lives together.
Your formative years.
Yeah, yeah.
You broke into the business together.
Yeah, I have nothing but fond memories, you know what I mean? Except for, you know, when I started taking a dive. But, you know, that was my decision, and, you know, I paid for, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, physically and, you know, emotionally. But right now I'm on the path I'm supposed to be on, and I feel really good about my life, and my health is in, I'm in great shape. I'm down to a buck 50, yeehaw, you know, which is the perfect weight for me. So I exercise a lot. I eat good. I have a wonderful relationship. I got a great band. I'm writing great music, and got a lot of great stuff happening. You know.
That brings us. We're coming right back then to the newest album. He Saw It Coming. Kyle,
I did.
That's right. Let's hear a little bit of "Blame It on the Night." How does the record industry work in 2017, 18 for a veteran artist? Do you record the album and then shop it around, or do you get signed by it? This is on Frontiers Records, I think.
Yeah, no, we had the deal before we went and did the record.
Okay, that's cool.
Normally, I think it would, I don't know. I mean, I've never had that issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, fortunately, I think, you know, people look at me and they think, okay, well, going on my past merits, you know, they say, okay, well, we're pretty sure he's come out with something that's worth, you know, reproducing, or at least I hope that. So we didn't make any demos or anything like that. Nor did we for our new record label, Cleopatra, which we're putting out. They just released Shelter Me, which, as I said, was my first solo album released in 96. That was only in Japan. Now they've released it in the States, and they're going to re-release For You. And they're releasing an album called Once Bitten Acoustical Bites, pardon me, which is an acoustic version of the Once Bitten album.
Oh, nice.
And it's an album in its entirety recorded acoustically, or unplugged, as you would say.
That's cool.
And it's really cool. I mean, it came out far better than I thought it was going to. There were songs I was going, how are we going to do this song? You know, unplugged, living on the edge. I mean, how's that going to work? And some of the songs I thought were going to be like just weren't going to work were some of the most amazing tracks. Like, God, there's Never Change Heart. That song is frighteningly good. I just love this record. The rendition I did of Save Your Love is just so far from the original. Because I recorded again.
And when can we hear that? When's that coming out?
That'll be out, should be out in the fall.
All right.
Because we're just finishing up the backgrounds right now. And we've taken our time with it because, you know, you're going to do a record, you're redoing an album that's a classic. You know, our first platinum album. And you've got to do it, you know, it's got to be really good.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted to make sure that the vocals were right on. I didn't want to do exact copies of what I did before, but I wanted to keep that same, you know, same vibe and same feeling, same youthful exuberance, you know, and that same angst that I had when I was doing that album. And it really came across. And just more mature. I'm a better singer than I was then. I mean, I'm a better singer.
Here's a question about publishing and stuff like that. Because there are so many great white best of packages and I'm sure they're not calling you up and saying, do you mind if we do this?
No.
Are you getting your due monetarily from those type of things?
No, I really don't even know. There's so many.
There's a ton. It's ridiculous.
You know, I can't even go there.
The best of, the greatest, the definitive.
Yeah, the most, surely the most incredible is best of you ever. The best of the best of the best of the best, you know, times infinity plus one.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I every once in a while I look up and see, oh, we got a new album out. I didn't even bother looking at it. You know, I mean, it's just like, here we go again. Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
This is live, folks. This is live. No, this is scripted. Your wife's calling.
What,
honey? I'll be home in a while. Okay, I'm doing an interview.
I got a couple more songs from He Saw It Coming. Let's hear "Love Don't Live Here."
Oh, I love this song. Thank you.
Hey, baby, where you been? I've been a spin again, and I haven't seen you for a while. The side of town with the same old fools who took it down. But now here you come running back, all the stories you deny. But I could always hear the truth behind your every lie. Love don't leave me no more. We're gonna take a lot of things to mend my broken wings.
Jack, I put it out to our listeners if they had a question for Jack to email it to me. And most of the questions were things that I was going to cover anyway. But I got one here that I don't even know what this is. So this is going to be interesting. It's from a listener, Demas Banuelos. I might be saying that wrong. Probably am.
Probably are.
Yes. It says, hopefully I'm not too late, but I've always wondered, what's the story behind Wasted Rock Ranger?
Story of my life, man. We were talking about it earlier. When Guns N' Roses were doing the Appetite record, Slash, we used to hang out, me, Slash, and Duff, and Steven Adler. We used to hang out all the time, to the point we even had a cocktail we invented. It was called a White Rose. It was like, I forget what was in it, but it was terrifyingly horrible. And we were hanging down at Rumble, and they said, dude, you got to hear the song. This is the story of your life, dude. So they had a band, this guy called Porky and the Answers. And they played the song for me, and I'm just going, oh, my God, that is so hysterical. That is my life story. So I told the band, I go, we got to record the song. We got to record it. They go, okay, man, we'll record it. So we went and recorded the song, and it was on the B-side of Once Bitten, Twice Shy single, if I'm correct. And it was also on the European version of Twice Shy.
Wow.
And it was totally blacklisted. I mean, the song was like, you know, it was like, you wouldn't play it on the radio, put it that way. But it was, we do it live every once in a while just for fun. But yeah, that was my life at that time. Oh. Many, many years of my life. You know, it's like the kind of summed it up on the new album, My Addiction. You know, that was the future of that song.
Well, Demas knows his Great White. He also added, love playing that song for the unsuspecting. let's hear one more from He Saw It Coming, and then we'll do some promotion, and then we'll get Jack out of here. But Jack, I'm going to thank you right now.
Oh,
I'm not going to forget, but this was fantastic. Great
thank
conversation.
You. Thank you. You too.
Wonderful to meet you.
Hope not to bore, you know. No.
Not boring
I appreciate
at
it.
All.
Thank you. Anytime, I'd love to be on here. You guys do a great show, and I enjoy the, you know, and some intelligent questions. A lot of times you don't get that.
Thank you. We try to ask what a fan might want to know, but, you know, and because that's how.
I appreciate
it. That's just how I like to do it. Let's hear My Addiction. I do want to give out another shout out to Robbie Lochner.
Robbie Lochner, yep.
He helped, he set this up. Yeah. So thank you, Robbie. And he's in your band.
He's my guitarist, my co-writer, my best friend. Yeah, he's my everything.
Jack, where can we, you're on Twitter?
Actually, yeah, we're on Twitter. Jack Russell's Great White Facebook. Jack's Great White. Oh, God, I remember our own website. Go on Facebook. Okay, you'll find us there. we had to shut down a Facebook page because of our last manager. I know we opened another one, but I can't remember the name of it.
We'll find it. I'm not
one of those internet guys. I mean, right. I just figured out how to text the other day. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Well, on Twitter, you're at Jack's Great White.
That's where it is. Okay.
So you can find Jack on Twitter. And the website is Jack Russell's Great White
Band.com. That's right. That's Jack Russell's Great White Band.com.
That's where
Jack
the tour Russell's dates Great are. White that's Band. Where everything you know or need to know about Jack Russell is going to be there.
Everything that I don't know, you can tell me. I'll log in there and check it out.
Now, for us, we are at Rock Solid Show. I'm at Pat_Francis. Kyle is at Kyle.Sinfrani. For our Patreon subscribers, I want you to know that Jack signed 5 CDs and an LP for us, and we'll be giving those away very soon. So everyone who's a $2 Patreon subscriber, you will have a chance to win those.
I'm going to send you
four CDs.
I'm going to send you some Shelter Me records for you too.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. All right, great. I'll send Robbie the address.
Actually, Rob, because Robbie has all the stuff, so I'll just tell him.
Excellent. I appreciate that.
I'll sign them for you and get them off to you.
Oh, terrific. I might keep one of those for myself, Jack.
There you go.
We're going to play the playout song. It, you know what it's going to be, right? Once Bitten, Twice.
Oh, well. I didn't want to say it, but you know.
I
make fun of that song, but man, thank God. You know, what a great tune. And it's just, we sold a lot of records. I mean, we sold over 800,000 45s.
Yeah, I bet
Who bought 800,000? Who buys 800,000?
You made Ian 45s? Hunter very happy.
Oh, yeah, really happy. Yeah.
Jack Russell, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Jack.